You're listening to Authors Talk About It podcast, where, simply put, authors talk about it. They talk about their books, why they wrote them, and share a little about themselves. On Authors Talk About It, the books become the windows to the author's souls. Now, here are your hosts, Drs. Rob and Janelle Alex.
The views and opinions expressed by guests of this podcast do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions held by Authors Talk About It and its hosts. Make your own decisions.
Okay, everybody. Oh, I mean, this interview today is, I'm ready to dive into it. There's so much excitement, adventure, nature, maybe a little sexy thing or two here or there.
But, I know, I'm looking at the cover of his book right now, and I'm like, oh, wildlife, and there's the big moose antlers and a brassiere.
Yes.
Pink, lacy brassiere hanging off of it. So,
So this book has a little bit of everything for you and this author. So it's going to be a fun ride today.
Yeah, I think so. So with that all being said, I want to introduce our guest today. So we have with us Michael Mojolewski. He is a correspondent and co-host for Earthwise, the anchor TV show on the Outdoor Life channel, featuring all the powers and nuances of the natural world. Michael is a roving correspondent for the national radio show The Good Life, reporting from the field on his adventures all over the world. After living dateless on the wild island, upon returning to civilization, Michael was startled to find he was chosen Cosmopolitan's The Bachelor of the Month, and Alaska Men Magazine's Centerfold Story. And mind you, he shared with us here that he kept his pants on and his parka on, and just that he did have a staple through his navel. But after receiving 5,000 letters from women around the world, he married one of the correspondents. Michael's latest book, Wildlife, The Misadventures of a Cosmo Bachelor, is attracting rave reviews from everyone except his mother.
Yes, I love that.
So welcome.
Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, guys. Absolute honor to be here. Thank you so much.
Awesome. And I have to laugh because I know when you were telling me how to pronounce your last name, which I tried to butcher anyway, you said your nickname or your friends call you Mojo, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and Austin Powers stole it for the movie.
Well, we love Austin Powers. So Mike Myers, shame on you. But
I had to get it from somewhere, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. So tell everybody, because first of all, I know I kind of touched that a little bit there, but first of all, for those of you that, good Lord, what is wrong with me today?
I don't know.
For those of you that don't know anything about Michael, and you have no idea that he spent time alone, and I know I kind of touched on that there, but tell everybody that a little bit. So give them a little background of how you spent so much time alone and then why you were so shocked to even be, you know, oh my gosh, you're famous.
Well, you know, the love of books was instilled by my mother. And I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and my dad was this famous football player in the NFL with the Cleveland Browns. But that was back in the day before they made the millions of dollars.
Right.
You know, it was more the love of the game. Mm-hmm. And my mom would read me to sleep every single night when I was a boy, like 6, 7 years old. Mm-hmm. And she said, even when my eyes were closed and my chest was moving up and down, I was sleeping, she kept reading. And it's been proven, if you want to learn a foreign language, let the tape recorder run all night. Because I think our subconsciouses never really sleep.
Right.
That there's always a part of us that's monitoring, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so my mom would read me all these great classic stories, you know, Grimm's Fairy Tales, King Arthur, mm-hmm. Knights of the Round Table, Ivanhoe, all this magic and adventure. And one night, she started to read to me from Jack London, mm-hmm. and it was that marvelous classic book, The Call of the Wild. Mm. Now, why that particular story resonated so deeply, I don't know. But all my life, I was in search of wilderness. Mm-hmm. And then in Aspen, Colorado, where I lived for a while, being a ski bum out of college, I went to a film revival, and there was this wonderful movie with Robert Redford called Jeremiah Johnson. And it's about a mountain man in the late 1800s that goes up into the Rocky Mountains, where you guys are, and he wants to live with the natives and learn from the animals, and of course, he knows nothing. Uh-huh. And I came out of that movie, and I'll never forget, in Aspen. It's about 7,000 feet up, and it was one of those crystal clear nights. You could see the Milky Way. And I just beamed into the universe with such intention. Where can I have that experience today? Is there a place left on Earth that you can live like that mountain man, where there's a food chain intact of wild animals, where there's native people to learn from, where there's purity of nature? I mean, be careful what you ask for. You just might get it. 2 months later, I'm living on a wilderness island in the Inside Passage to Alaska, surrounded by bears and killer whales. And it was a woman that came into my life as sort of an angel on earth. She didn't have wings, of course, but she connected me to my future.
I tell you, and that's, you know, just because I can't say that I would be one that would be able to handle it, because I don't even like to go camping, but but yet I'm not like all prissy and all that. I don't need that either. But the idea, that was one of my dreams, because, you know, sometimes we have many. And one of the things when I was in high school that I wanted to grow up and do was to study and study the killer whales and the orcas in the wild. That's what I wanted. So knowing that you've just been out there and I was just like, you know, I just loved even the thought of it, being in that environment like that. I just am fascinated. So I have to admit, I can see where perhaps, you know, women are like, ooh, you know, they're like, ooh, that's just amazing. Yeah. So I can see where some of the women might have been maybe a little over the top, and who knows what all, you know, they shared with you over the years when you came back.
Well, you know what was crazy, you guys, is the couple years that I lived primarily alone, like in the winter, you could go months up there without seeing a human being, because the storms would rage not for days, but for weeks.
Yeah.
In fact, my first winter, I went 67 straight days without seeing another human being.
Wow.
But the thing was, is all that time alone in the wilderness, there were no females around. Yes. In fact, the Alaska government a few years ago did a survey. They were curious as to the ratio of their citizens, male to female. So they sent surveyors out into the bush to count heads. And they came back shocked. They discovered that for every 10 men living in the wilderness of Alaska and also British Columbia, there's only one female.
Oh, wow.
So why do they think that
is? In fact, the gals up there have a funny saying. They say the odds are good. Goods are odd.
That's hilarious.
Because you have all these lone wolves, all these guys living in cabins, mumbling to themselves and twitching around when they see a human being. And, you know. So here I am, no dates for a couple years, in isolation. I write my first book describing, you know, kayaking with the killer whales, having them jump, you know, right over your boat, 20 feet, full body length up in the air, northern lights storming around your cabin, like all the magic in that place. It's so pristine, so beautiful. So I wrote this book, and I didn't know anything about, you know, getting an agent or how publishing works. And I sent it to HarperCollins, one of the biggest publishers in the world in New York City. And they published the book. And Helen Gurley Brown, a Cosmopolitan magazine, chose me as a Bachelor of the Month. So I didn't know any of this. And I came back to New York to do publicity for the book. And I went from famine to feast. No dates for years. And there were 5,000 letters waiting in mailbags. It was every man's fantasy.
I'm sure. I was cracking up when I was reading through the book because you were even, and forgive me for going there, but even just the idea you're in, I think it was LaGuardia Airport, and the toilet would flush by itself, and you were like, what the? This doesn't happen. What? So, I mean, there's just, I loved reading, and of course, you know, we tell everybody I can't read every single page of them.
Right.
We have too many, but, you know, just to be able to pull out those, I was just cracking up reading that section, and because you did, you were so far removed from, I guess you could say, civilization.
Right.
And so in touch with nature, right?
Well, and you know, that was the world I came from. But yet I felt like there was a great book written years ago called A Stranger in a Strange Land. I felt like a Martian crash landing on planet Earth for the first time. Because in the wilderness, it's almost as if my past got erased. Because every day was a year of new experiences, life and death challenges. I mean, I lived almost like 10 lifetimes in the couple years there on that island. So it distanced me a lot from my, you know, Cleveland, Ohio childhood, that when I came back, I couldn't walk. Because when you walk on those trails in the wilderness, thousands of years, pine needles have trickled down. And it's soft as a trampoline, and your muscles change.
Right,
you get literally a spring in your step, and then I hit the concrete, the unforgiving, hard world of the city, and I couldn't walk. I'm going side to side like a drunken sailor. New Yorkers are pushing me out of the way. I couldn't process everything. It was all coming too fast and multi-layered. So as you mentioned, I went into the men's room just to escape, and I was hyperventilating. And I went into a stall, not to go to the bathroom, but just to like catch my breath and recenter myself. And that damn haunted automatic kept roaring at me.
It's haunted.
When I peed on the beach for years, and then I'm looking at this device, and I'm going, oh my God, you pee in this ceramic bowl and it flushes. And, you know, it was like I was seeing everything as if for the first time.
And I admit it's hilarious, but yet to be in your shoes at that time. Yeah, it would have been exceptionally overwhelming.
Well, I think of the movie, I forget which Tarzan movie it was, where they bring him back to the city, and, you know, he's having that culture shock because he's wanting to swing from the awnings of the businesses out there in New York and stuff, and, you know, to be that different of culture, because that, like, the two extremes, as far as extremes as you can get, you know, being that isolation in Alaska, and then going to New York where it's just, you can see how many people you can cram into every square inch.
I want to ask, though, because you did, you grew up in Ohio. I mean, you know, it's the Midwest-ish base. Cleveland's up on the lake. But, you know, it's like you go from that and you spent time as a ski bum. How in the heck did you go out and even know how to survive and to, you know, kill and cook your own food? I mean, how in the heck did you figure that out?
Well, you know, you guys, ignorance is bliss. When I was there, if we have nine lives like a cat, I have about 1.5 left.
Aww.
And I really believe we all have a life plan with an exit point. And no matter what stupidity that I do, I don't check out yet until I get to that X on the plan. Because I almost caught my thumb off. I almost bled to death. I got caught in an 80-mile-an-hour storm. The engine fell off my boat. I should have drowned. I mean, there were so many life and death experiences, because when I first went there, I'd only been camping twice before in my life.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I had nothing on my resume, and unlike the TV show Survivor, there was nobody else on that island to vote you off and send you home.
And nobody to make sure that you didn't kick the bucket so that their show went down the toilet, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, you just didn't have a safety net then, right?
Yeah, and William James, a very famous psychologist, he had a great line, and I actually was reading a book, and it saved my life. It came at me like it was in boldface. And James wrote that we as human beings, we lead lives inferior to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We only live a tiny part of the colossal life and potential that we all possess.
Yeah.
And I kind of took that as a challenge, saying, you know what, it's Einstein saying we only operate on 4% of our brain power. I said, I want to maximize everything I got. And what I don't know, I'm going to learn from the native people.
Awesome. So you were able to connect then with the natives in Alaska and begin to acclimate and to learn how to do it?
Yeah, but you know what? They didn't like me at first.
I was going to say.
Because after 67 days, that first winter, and I made a big mistake. It was all internal rather than external. In other words, I was so scared every day. And I was trying to keep myself alive because Alaska seduces you with beauty, and it will try to kill you in the next moment if you're not prepared. Mm-hmm. Jack London said there's 1,000 ways Alaska can kill a person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to stay alive. And I'm not talking. I should have sang. I should have read Shakespeare to keep my speech alive. 67 days later, there's a break in those storms. A boat got tossed up onto the beach, and 5 full-blooded Kwakiutl native men that carved the beautiful totem poles came out of that boat. I was so excited to see people again. I hopped out onto the stump porch outside the cabin. You know, my brain fired to my tongue to say, hi, would you like to come in for a cup of coffee? We speak without thinking. But don't talk for over 2 months. What comes out of your mouth sound like,
Oh my goodness, guys
are looking at each other like, we could take this island back without even trying. This kid is drunk at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Oh goodness.
And, you know, they came in, they sat at the kitchen table. I brought a big suitcase full of books because it gets dark up there at 4 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Sun doesn't come up till about 11 the next morning. Wow. Perfect. I can catch up on Anna Karenina, War and Peace, Dostoevsky, all those long Russian novels, Moby Dick, you know, sit there at the cabin with a kerosene lamp circle. So Larry Joseph, the chief of the Kwakutals, he kept looking at those books that were piled up on a daybed. And then he looked at me and he spoke for the first time. He said, "You white people, you have a head full of knowledge. You know all the facts." Then he pointed to his heart. "But you have no wisdom. You're going to end up burning those books and your wood stove to keep yourself alive." You know, I keep trying to talk. And then they stood up single file out the doorway. Larry paused in the doorframe, looked over his right shoulder. His parting words were, "I'll be back in the spring to collect your bones."
Oh, wow.
That was the welcoming committee. Oh, that was the Chamber of Commerce, but there was no welcome neighbor fruit basket.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, I took it as a challenge. I said, you know, I'm going to try to show these guys that even an inexperienced white guy could maybe survive in their world.
So, yeah. So what broke the ice finally there between you and the natives?
No pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended.
Larry's a man of his word. About 3 months later, there was a warm spring day. I had just caught an 80-pound halibut.
Wow.
And I was filleting it on the dock, and I heard an engine, which is a rarity because it's so remote.
Mm-hmm.
And this little skiff comes around another island in front of mine, and there's Larry Joseph with a big empty black bucket in the bow of his boat. And when I nervously called out, "Larry, what's that big bucket for?" He said, "Oh, I came by to collect your bones, but I see that you made it, eh?" I handed Larry half of my fish. Not another word was spoken. And after that moment, an encyclopedia set opened of practical wisdom, philosophical wisdom from the natives up there. And you know what's amazing, guys, is the native people in British Columbia and Alaska, they've never been conquered by the white man.
Yeah.
They've never been thrown away on useless reservations like in the lower 48.
Yeah.
Right.
So they have lived there continuously with their pride and heritage intact for about 10,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
They are literally the masters of that universe.
Wow.
So when they accepted me, and Larry told me later, he said, "Man, we decided to leave you out there that first winter. Let nature ask the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And if you came up with the answers on your own, then maybe you're supposed to be here."
Awesome. I love that. Let nature ask the questions. I love that.
And then, you know, the being out the
killer
whales and just, my kayak was 17 feet long. They're like twice the length of the boat. Never felt any harm. To look into those lucid blue eyes, there's another mind on our planet because they rule the ocean. And it should really be called Planet Ocean, not Planet Earth, because 71% of our planet surface is saltwater.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And killer whales are in every ocean around the world, and they're the top predator. They eat everything, and nothing eats the killer whale.
Right.
So to hang out in their presence, oh my God.
I got chills. Of course, you know, Rob knows, but that's one of my big connections, one of my, I don't know what you want to call it, but yeah, very, very passionate about them. Love them. So, and I haven't gotten to see them in the wild yet.
Right.
So that's on my bucket list. I've seen a lot, but I haven't got to see them yet. So, yeah. So, you know, coming back, you stayed for how long again?
I was there 2 years.
2 years. So then what triggered your decision that it was time to come back?
And as you guys know today, that my publicist at HarperCollins told me, "Michael, if you're a writer in today's era, you can't live on an island and just write. You've got to come back and push books like they're boxes of soap."
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to take your writer hat off now and you got to put your marketing hat on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I didn't, you know the business end of it. I was trying to struggle to know the writing end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Janet at HarperCollins, the publicist, was just immeasurable. So when this offer came from Cosmopolitan, I didn't want to do it. Because Cosmo was this silly magazine that I would flip through at the dentist's office.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. You know? And it was about, you know, it's kind of like a girl's Bible of makeup and clothes and, you know, how to have an orgasm and things
it
like
still
that.
Is, isn't it? I mean,
it's very over the top.
Yeah.
And I said, wait a minute, Janet, I don't want to do this because I want to be taken as seriously as a scientist and a biologist, naturalist, you know, having written my first book. She said, if Helen Gurley Brown in your blurb and picture will include the title of your book, you cannot buy that kind of publicity.
Exactly, right.
And then I was starting to see how it works. And what was amazing is all these 5,000 women that wrote went out, and not all of them, but a good number of them bought the book. Uh-huh. And the book is nonfiction and it's first person. So they pretty much knew me.
Yes.
I didn't know them. And it was frightening at first. It was so overwhelming because it was nonstop. And because Cosmo put their stamp of approval on you, the floodgates were open.
Mm-hmm. An
agent at that time, an agent friend who was very, you know, plugged into the book world, and he said, dude, Sigmund Freud once asked what the women really want. You've got a shot at finding out.
Yeah.
How about you study these women that you're about to date like you studied the wildlife in Alaska? He said, leave your emotions out of it. Use the scientific method. Of course, that went out the window on the first date. But Michael Larson actually gave me the idea for the title. You know, and wildlife, I love titles that are double meaning. Uh-huh. Wildlife, two separate words, mean a life that's wild, but it also means wildlife as if studying women as different classifications of wildlife.
Interesting. Yeah, that's very, because you did. You had this opportunity just handed to you.
Yeah.
It's like the master of the universe said, hey, walk into the female candy shop. All the jars are open. Lids are off the jars. Yeah. Help yourself to as many different colors and flavors as you want for as long as you want. I mean, every guy that I knew at that time, they were going crazy. My own father and brother, when I was going over to Phoenix, Arizona to see them for Christmas, my dad said, Michael, when the girls are in the kitchen cooking, throw some of those letters into a duffel bag, bring them over here, and we'll go out in the garage and flip through them.
I was saying, 'cause they were trying to live a little bit through you. Like,
yeah,
through you.
And you know, you guys, I went to BBC in London to publicize Inside Passage, and you know, I did these bunch of interviews, and they're shuttling me like from one studio room to the next.
Yeah.
And I had a little water break to rest my voice, and a lawyer comes up. And this is the hallowed halls of BBC. And he whips out a checkbook. And he says, man, in, you know, in a proper British accent, which I can't imitate, he says, if you can get me in as the next bachelor, he said, write in any amount within reason.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it was like I was in this feeding frenzy of, you know, not only the dates, but then all my male buddies were coming after me, too. It was too much.
Yeah.
Well, with everything, when it's available like that, do you feel like you overindulged in it?
Well, you know what, Rob? You're exactly right. You hit it because one of the chapters in my book, Wildlife, it's called Sugar Shock.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're eating dessert every hour, day after day, you just get to a point where it's like enough.
Ah, yeah.
And I was looking for meaning and I was looking for substance. Not that I didn't learn a lot, you know, from this opportunity, but after I dated my way down about two mailbags, there was a letter from a girl, and basically it was her resume. It was all of her accomplishments in life. And in between the lines, it was none of that Rapunzel stuff of I'm helpless in a tower or a little town in small town America. Can you come with your dog team and rescue me? You know, I hope that girls don't get read that story anymore.
Yeah.
And Paula's letter was none of that. It was like, hey, buddy, I don't really need you. But if you want strength meeting strength, call me up.
Oh.
Interesting.
So her letter was very impressive. No naked picture. The shot was from afar. But this was an accomplished Wonder Woman. And as soon as I read that letter, I said, I'm going to marry this girl. And I hadn't even met her yet.
Oh, wow.
Awesome.
So it's something I didn't want to do that I thought was silly, actually gave me, you know, helped my career with a big boost with the first book. And it also brought me a wife and a life partner. A pot of gold was at the end of that rainbow. So I'm learning when opportunities present themselves, don't judge that book by the cover.
Right.
You know, because hidden underneath your snap judgment, oh, it's just silly or whatever, was a life changer.
Wow.
Yeah. See, that's just awesome.
That's beautiful. So do you have any aspirations for any other? I mean, obviously, you're a very adventurous guy. Do you have any other big adventures planned for yourself?
Well, you know, we're constantly going out into the world. And, you know, one of the amazing things about Paula, she's had so many careers, you know, gone to chef schools, and she was a Playboy bunny when she was in her 20s. And now she's a flight attendant for United Airlines. Mm. And I had no idea. When you marry a flight attendant, you have free tickets for life.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
When we were dating, she threw a t-shirt at me. It said, "Marry me, fly free."
Yeah,
and I mean, I would have married her if she was a banker and had 2 weeks vacation. So now we can, you know, when you travel, the most expensive prohibitive part is usually getting there. It's the airfare.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not hotels or car rentals or whatever. So, I mean, we're just checking that bucket list off big time. We got back from Mongolia, and we stayed in a yurt or gur with nomadic people. We rode camels.
Wow.
We were practiced our falconry with these golden eagles that they hunt with. And, you know, now we're going back to China to study pandas. And it's like the whole world is your oyster because, you know, you can take away the airfare.
Yeah.
And then also with the new book, we're trying to push it into a movie, and I really want to take my work in that direction. I mean, I will always be a writer because if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But I would really like to have a hand in developing wildlife as a film or a TV series.
Oh, I would think that would happen. And a TV series, I could even see that too. Because I'm like, it's so, like I said, I mean, clearly. The typical woman finds that idea very manly and very sexy, you know, but yet at the same time, as your wife did, you can be the non-typical woman and come at it from a different perspective and still find it very sexy. And so and then the guys are going to like it because who wouldn't want to be that guy, right?
Yeah, it's like a chick flick and guys would like it too because it's sort of like, oh my God, you know, the old harem, a guy collects a harem without trying that whole thing, you know? And when my publisher, Covalis Press in Oregon, decided to get it, she said, "Michael, you are lethal." And I go, "What do you mean?" She says, you're a man of the mind. You're a scientist.
Right.
You've got that little bit of nerdiness of, you know, reading and you know, being an internal in studying and your curiosity. But then Alaska gave you this wrapping, you know, this body of sort of like, you know, the hunk. So you put the nerd inside that physique, it's pretty lethal. And I never even thought of it that way because I'm just me, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why this whole madness that was going on, you know, with Cosmo, I never really took it seriously because it just was so, I mean, you couldn't make it up as a writer,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's, in a sense, it's, you know, like a musician or an actor or somebody that all of a sudden they get really noticed and they get famous, and or, you know, it could be an athlete, but all of a sudden, you know, that big thing happens and it kind of can be overwhelming.
Well, yeah, because I commend you, Michael, because a lot of people that get thrust into that position of all of a sudden you're famous and you're the eligible bachelor and everything, you know, they can't handle it. And it seems like, you know, through your trials and tribulations that you've handled it well and have used it to serve you in a very positive way.
Boy, that is so wise to serve, you know, and that's how I wanted it to be. I didn't want to get gobbled up by it. And, you know, Andy Warhol years ago said that everybody will be famous for 15 minutes. And it's sort of coming true with social media and reality shows and all of that. But at the same time, my little sliver, I mean, I can't imagine with people like Leonardo DiCaprio or, you know, these A-list actors. And what I discovered during, you know, my 15 minutes was, do these women really like me, or is it the idea of me? So here's Leonardo DiCaprio. How does he find a meaningful relationship? Yes. Is this woman after my fame and my money? Right. Or does she even care about who I am deep inside? It's hard to separate that.
Oh, I can't even fathom, because it would have to be, because so many of them would be after the, ooh, I was with Michael Modjeleski, you know, or whatever, right? And so it's a bragging right, or they're after perhaps the money that they think is going to be with it, or just the fame and just those pieces. And sadly, there's a lot of that on both sides, men and women, but, you know, that have that. And so...
You guys, I'll tell you a quick, like the most surreal, sort of a funny one. Is my phone rang one Sunday night, and this is one of the dates, and it was a collect phone call. And I'm going, well, I'm thinking to myself, that's kind of strange. You know, who would call collect? And the operator's going, you know, will you accept the charges? And I go, sure. You know, being the writer, my curiosity has always led me into trouble and also into good things. And I go, sure, I'll accept. So I go, hello. And she goes, is this really you? And I go, yeah, I mean, it's Michael. She goes, thank you for accepting my call. I'm a prisoner, and I'm here in an all-woman's jail in Florida. And Michael, it gets so hot and humid inside this jail that it almost rains inside. And she goes, but you probably don't want to talk to me because I'm incarcerated. Mm-hmm. And I go, hey, Doris, sometimes bad things happen to good people. By the way, what are you in for? I'm thinking, you know, shoplifting. And she goes, third-degree murder. Oh. And she goes, I have to tell you, I was walking to the exercise yard yesterday, and I looked into all the cells down the long hall, and just about every girl, somebody ran your Cosmo picture off on a copy machine, and just about every girl had you with a sled dog kissing you in the snow in Alaska, pinned up on their cell block wall, because you're a symbol of escape for us. Oh. Come and whisk us away. And my jaw opened about 3 feet. I mean, I literally was speechless.
Yeah. What do you say to that?
Think, and the weirdest thing is Cosmopolitan magazine goes into 100 countries. It's translated into 87 languages. I think it's the number one selling women's magazine in the world. So it was like, you know, the women weren't just from North America, but they were coming from Mongolia and everywhere. It was too much.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm thinking those that were brazen enough to send you an email, or you know, and maybe brazen's not there. Maybe they were scared to death when they sent. I said, "Did I say email? Send your letter.
Did.
Email wouldn't be the right time." But you know, what about all of those that didn't?
Yeah,
and they've got your picture posted somewhere.
Well, and you know, the funny thing was, is most women. I would say that 90% of the letters, and it was funny, guys, because a lot of them were handwritten in purple and pink ink.
Interesting.
And the heart and the eyes were dotted with hearts.
Oh, my goodness.
And they were reeking of perfume. Like when I'd open the mailbox up, you know, this avalanche of letters would pour out, like, you know, obsession was clashing with, you know, whatever perfume of the day.
Okay, now from a girl's perspective here, or from a woman's perspective here, why would any woman think that a man wants to read a letter soaked in perfume with little cute hearts on it? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm just.
I know that was strange. And then here's how they would all begin. Not all of them, but a lot of the letters would begin. I can't believe I'm doing this. I've never done anything like this before in my life.
Really?
But then the innocence would slowly diminish to the point where when I got to the end of the letter, the last sentence would be something like, if we get together, I promise to rock your socks off.
And I'm sure there's a lot of that stuff in those letters, and many of those letters that would not be appropriate for us to share today.
Well, that's why, you know, I was so fortunate to get Pat Conroy and Amy Tan. I mean, the greatest writers of... you know, the past 20 years or whatever, and they did these amazing blurbs that are on the front cover of the book. But what sells more books is my mother's statement that you alluded to earlier, and her actual quote is, oh my God, what did I raise?
Yes, and Rob, did I not just freaking crack up when I read that off the cover of the book? Yes. I'm like, oh my God, I was just rolling,
That's perfect.
You're exactly right. More than anything else, that would make me pick the book up and read it. She's like, uh-oh.
And you know what's funny, you guys, is I do this... summer gig with Princess Cruises where I speak on the ship and I do PowerPoint programs. I'm the naturalist, talk about the wildlife. Cool. And we go right by the island that I used to live on. So talk about the dots connecting into a circle.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I have a book table outside the big house, the Princess Theater. And like 500-700 people will be in there for each program. And we get all 50 states each cruise. And we get 30 different countries from around the world that want to see the wonders of Alaska. So as people are congregating around the book table after the program, it's just fascinating to hear life stories. So one day at the end of the line, this really nice middle-aged lady was there. And it turned out that she was a nun. But being on vacation, she didn't have her habit on.
Uh-huh.
And I think a lot of nuns now are kind of getting away from wearing the habit and just, you know, being regular people among us.
Right.
So I didn't know she was a nun. And she, I have four books, different books on the book table. She made a beeline to wildlife. She didn't even look at the other ones about the, you know, killer whales or whatever. She picked up wildlife and she put it right in front of me. She said, "I'll take this book, please." And when you're on the cruise ship, you don't have any cash money. You have a credit card or a cruise card to get you in and out of your cabin. And you also use it for anything you buy, drinks or whatever. So she gave me her cruise card to pay for the book. And I saw Sister Mary Rose. I tore the book out of her hands, and I said, "Absolutely not."
It is.
She leaned over on the book table. She had a twinkle in her eye, and she said, "Michael, nuns are people too." So you guys, somewhere in a convent, wildlife is being passed around a flashlight to read under the covers.
Yeah, I was going to say, just funny. Because, you know, and of course those things, those restrictions are loosening a bit. But yeah, just because they're supposed to practice abstinence does not mean that they do or that they don't have some fantasy. Look at the hell you have brought upon those poor ladies. No, I'm just kidding. You are going to burn, if I believed in hell.
Well, you know what? For a week after that, every time I went outside, I'm waiting for a thunderbolt. How dare you corrupt my sister, you know.
Oh,
my goodness. We can talk.
You know, I call my whole life, I call it La Vida Loca. It's craziest life. How it could go from one extreme to the other. And then to bring meaning into my life, to bring a life partner, my best friend. I mean, to bring me Paula through all that craziness and to actually end up with something, you know, that is so amazing at the end of that roller coaster ride.
And I know, I'm sure, I don't mean to speak for my husband here, but I'm sure he would agree. That's so touching. And
yes, it is passionate.
It's so fascinating how you were able to find this amazing diamond in the rough.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, I mean, the way you speak of her and you love her so much, that just really shines through in it.
Yeah.
Well, the relationship is as easy as breathing.
Awesome.
When we're together, we can talk. Or we can just read together for hours. It's almost like, and I'm sure you guys know, it's like when you're soulmates, you almost become telepathic with each other.
Oh,
you know?
We do it all the time, yeah.
Not bad about that.
Yeah, we had a new thing that we were getting ready to do with some of our workshops for couples. And Rob texts me the other day. He goes, "Hey, here's the such and such training." And I'm like, "What? Why'd you call it a training?" And he told me, and I said, "Oh," I said, "because that's what I was thinking, is that we need to call these, you know, agent trainings, because we're doing the mission date night thing." So I'm like, that idea came to me in the middle of the night. And it was just one of those moments where it was so interesting how, we get the same messages at the same time, or we read one another's thoughts or whatever. And I know we interviewed a lady the other day, and she does a lot of relationship work. She's actually famous for it. But she said in between shows, we were done interviewing, because we interviewed for two different shows, but she said, "You guys are," how'd she say that? "Like, we work as one unit or something."
Yeah.
"We're so in sync." I'm like, "Really?" I mean, I guess we're used to it. But
yeah.
So we so honor yours. We can just see it.
And I know you guys know this. You feel it because I can feel your energy together. But, you know, a lot of guys said, "Dude, bet them, don't wet them." I mean, you could date a different woman every day for the rest of your life with all the letters and Cosmo. Mm-hmm. And then when I got married, a lot of those guys would say, "How do you know when you're in love?"
Mm-hmm.
And there's this great expression that you know you're in love when the other person's happiness is essential to your own.
I
That's beautiful.
And that's how I feel about Paula, and that's how she feels about me. And when you each are trying to make the other person happy, wow. Yeah. You know?
It's a wonderful place to be.
Yeah, and I mean, jobs come and go, money comes and go. What's more valuable in this lifetime than finding that life partner?
That's true.
You know, thank you for sharing that message. I mean, Rob, of course, shares those same views. But as you just said, that a lot of guys don't see it that way. And so thank you. Thank you for being out there and saying that. Because
well, there's no top or bottom. It's like every day I'm just amazed at how much growth there is between two people. It's like we all contain a universe, you know, and when you can grow and explore that internal spiritual universe with each other, oh my God, it's so exciting to jump out of bed every morning like, hey, what are we going to learn about each other today and together, you know? Yeah.
Awesome. Beautifully. I love to hear that. Michael, will you tell everybody, and I know you have a unique long last name, so of course your website will be in our show notes, but will you tell everyone how to find you on the internet? And obviously everybody, for one, you can find his books on Amazon, but please share.
Yeah, if you go on Amazon, where my books are, and you just type in the latest book, Wild Life, being two different words, W-I-L-D space L-I-F-E, it'll take you to my author page and you know, all of the work. But my whole life is sort of on my website. And as you mentioned, the last name would be spelled, you know, once the show comes out. But I will give it as M-O-D David Z Zebra ELEWSKI.com, MichaelMojaleski.com.
Right, so guys, don't be tripped up because it's not spelled like it sounds. So, right. so yeah, but we'll make sure that you guys can find that. So, awesome, lots of cool stuff. This has been a blast.
It has been a blast. Time has just flown by, Michael. Thank you so
much. Oh, my
much.
Goodness. It was like 2 minutes, you know?
Yeah,
just,
I know.
Yeah, lots and lots of fun. And this is, you know, there's, like I said, I don't get those opportunities to dive in cover to cover on so many of our books, but there's certain ones that I get sparked and I'm like, oh, and I have to sit it off on the shelf. So like when I have time, that one, I just feel like I want to pick up and read every word. So
this I know
is,
I will be.
Yeah, I'm fighting over it. Give it to me.
If you have any ideas for the movie, who you want to cast, you know, shoot me an email or let me know.
Okay,
oh
we'll do
gosh,
that.
Oh my gosh, I don't know how to think about that. Yeah, oh, interesting. I don't know. So anyways, but thank you so much for spending time with us today. And I'll tell you what, if you get a movie put together, you reach out. We'll definitely have to have you on the show again and share.
And you know what, you guys, if it does go to film, I'm very loyal to anybody I've, you know, was kind enough to have me on their program. And you've got tickets to the red carpet premiere.
Ooh,
oh, beautiful.
Sounds good.
Thank
so,
you.
Yeah, we'll definitely support that.
Yes.
Like, hey, is everybody gonna get this out there? So thank you so much. We had a great time, and I'm sure everyone else did as well.
Yes, I'm sure so. This is Rob Alex.
I'm Dr. Janelle Alex, and everybody, we will catch you tomorrow.